You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to Everything's on the Table, a weekly program where we ask, what is the recipe for the future of food in New York City? Each week, we examine the food policies impacting our everyday lives and what hangs in the balance as New Yorkers go to the polls this fall. We'll look at what's happening now and what the next administration can do to support a healthier, more sustainable, and fair city.
All right. Thanks so much for tuning in. You're listening to the Heritage Radio Network. Welcome to Everything's on the Table. I'm one of your co-hosts, Erin Fairbanks. Each week on Everything's on the Table, we'll be looking to distill topics like food initiatives for public health, how to deal with urban food waste, what our local government can do to end hunger in New York City, and more. We'll be basing a lot of our discussions off the food system of New York City's recipe for the future of food. We've got a full house here in the studio today, and I'm excited to introduce my co-host today, Kate McKenzie. Kate, welcome to the studio.
Thanks, Erin.
So Kate is the Director of Policy and Government Relations at City Harvest. There, she's responsible for creating and implementing the policy agenda for that organization, as well as developing programs that address the root cause of hunger by ensuring that people living in low-income communities have access to healthy, fresh food. And Kate is also very active in the Food Systems Network of New York City, the organization that's co-producing this series with the Radio Network. She sits on their leadership committee, and she also is the co-chair of their governance committee. And I'm going to go ahead and let her take us through the rest of the folks we have in the studio.
Thanks so much. We are really excited to have a diversity of participants in this show, starting with Jan Poppendick. Jan is the Food Policy Center at Hunter College's Director for Policy. And we have a number of other guests that I'm going to introduce as we go along. And, you know, we really wanted to have this session because, you know, during this season, we're just bombarded with numbers. Last week, new numbers on poverty came out for the country and New York City. And alarmingly, there are more than 1.7 million New Yorkers that live in poverty. And just for perspective, what that means is, let's just take a family of three, a mother, maybe she has two kids. For that woman to be considered living in poverty, she needs to make about $19,500. And that's really hard to wrap our minds around. And we think about all of the challenges of living in the city. And we really want to focus in this next 45 minutes on the topics of hunger and food insecurity. Another statistic that came out recently shows that that food insecurity, which quite simply means wondering where your next meal is going to come from. You don't always know. And for far too many people in New York City, actually about 1.4 million people, they don't know where their next meal is going to come from. And so, you know, really talking about this is important, particularly as we gear up for the holiday season when food becomes really at the front of most of our minds in a much more concerted way. And I'm really interested and eager to have Jan talk a little bit about why hunger is at its highest rate right now in New York City. And, Jan has written a book called Sweet Charity, along with a number of other books. And she's really quite the expert at discussing the many layers to hunger. Jan, tell us something, you know, about the state of hunger in New York.
Okay. Well, how do people become food insecure? Why do we have so many people among our neighbors who can't count on an adequate and reliable supply of food? And the answer is pretty simple. They don't have enough income. There aren't enough jobs, and the jobs that we have don't pay enough. When I say there aren't enough jobs, I'm talking about both the unemployment rate and the underemployment rate. Looking at this nationally, 16.9, that's almost 17%. Of our population are either unemployed or underemployed. And that only counts as underemployed people who are working fewer hours than they want to and need to. It doesn't count those attorneys, recent law school graduates that we hear about that are bussing tables or working at Starbucks. It doesn't count all the people who are working below their skill level. It only counts people whose hours are falling short of a full-time job. The unemployment unemployment rate itself nationally is around 8%, and in New York it's
slightly higher than that. Yeah.
Yep. So that's where we start in explaining why people are in need, hungry, food insecure, and in many cases turning to SNAP, the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, formerly known as food stamps and widely called food stamps by those of us who have trouble making those transitions. 47, almost 48 million Americans, one out of every seven, are now enrolled in the SNAP program. This is far and away the highest in our history. And here in New York, it's close to 2 million of our fellow citizens that are relying on this program. But if you look at the statistics on who's getting SNAP, you're going to discover that it's not just people who are unemployed. It's also a lot of people who are working and working full time. And that is because of the crime of what has happened to wages in our society. Wages have been eroded. They have been reduced. They have fallen. They are now lower than they were at the start of the new millennium for 70% of us. And wages at the very bottom, the bottom quintile or 20%, have fallen by 5% since several years ago.
Right. You know, I just want another statistic that I read recently is that 72% of Americans who are on the SNAP program or are receiving food stamp benefits are coming from a working family. And that's something that is really important to underscore, particularly in light of the drastic cuts that are in line for the program. And that's something that our listeners should also know about and really call their representative and make sure that these don't happen, because 2 million New Yorkers, as soon as November 1st, could see a big reduction in their food stamp benefits.
Okay. Do we want to talk about that for just a minute? Or
sure.
I'm going to move on.
Yeah.
You may be wondering, how do we know people are going to have a reduction in their food stamp benefits when Congress is still debating these big cuts that are threatening SNAP? We know that because food stamp recipients, SNAP participants, have had a small temporary boost in the value of their SNAP benefit. It came in as part of the stimulus, remember the ARRA, and actually studies showed that the quickest way to stimulate the American economy would be to increase the value of SNAP benefits. And so the Congress did just that. And when they did it, they set it up so that this rise in benefits would gradually be overtaken by inflation. Because even our Congress understood that very poor people should not experience a sharp drop in the purchasing power of their benefits. So they were going to let it be eroded away over time by inflation. But things got tight. The deficit became the major issue preoccupying people in Congress instead of jobs or wages, and they took the money that they had set aside for the increase in the SNAP benefit, and they used it for other worthy purposes. They used it for some of the provisions of the Healthy Hunger Free Kids Act that improved the standards in school lunch, and they used it to pay teachers and prevent Medicaid cuts. But here we are coming up on the night after Halloween, the 1st of November, which in some traditions we call All Saints Day, millions of New Yorkers are going to see their SNAP check go down. The average would be $29 for a household of three. Mm-hmm. This is a real hurt, a real cut, if you are making ends meet and counting every penny. It's something we really shouldn't let happen.
A bit later in the segment, we're also going to hear about the impact of the SNAP program to farmers participating in the green market program, and I look forward to chatting about that.
So I think we have a little bit of a sense of the scope of the hunger problem, in particular here in New York State and city. And what I would love to do is take just a quick break, and we come back, get a little sense of what's been happening at the mayoral level with regards to dealing with hunger issues. So let's take a short break, and we'll be back in just a second to bring a few more folks into the conversation and talk a little bit about the focus of the current administration here in New York City.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to Third Degree Rug Burns by Tax Star on the heritageradionetwork.org.
Each week on Everything's on the Table, the Heritage Radio Network shines a spotlight on the organizations we love and support. The National Resources Defense Council believes that all New Yorkers deserve better access to sustainably grown regional food. The NRDC is fighting the misuse of antibiotics in livestock by combating food waste and helping farmers to reach more consumers downstate. Learn more about the NRDC and join them in the quest for better food at nrdc.org, on Facebook, and follow them on Twitter at NRDC.
All right, we are back. You are listening to Everything's on the Table on the Heritage Radio Network. And this week we are taking a peek at hunger. And we're going to start off this segment by looking a little bit at the landscape of the current administration. So, Kate, can you give us a little sense of what has been the focus of the current administration?
Sure. You know, one of the things I want to highlight right now is that during the Bloomberg administration, the city has really tried to increase access to good food in low-income areas. Also joining us today is Rick Luftglass, who is the executive director of the Laurie M. Tisch Illumination Fund. Rick, how has that focus of increasing access to healthy and affordable food inspired the Illumination Fund?
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me as well. The foundation actually sort of dove into the issue of healthy food access with the encouragement of the Bloomberg administration, which invited us to participate as the private funder in the New York City Green Cart Initiative. And it was actually at the very beginning of the launch of the Laurie M. Tisch Illumination Fund, which was started with a mission of access and opportunity for New Yorkers. And when it, rather than, say, a particular issue, it was really mission or vision values driven. And so when presented with the opportunity to run the New York City Green Card Initiative, it struck on both the level of food access as well as economic opportunity, and it's produced about 900 jobs since then. So we've been the partner with the city and the New York City Department of Health particularly. Essentially, the more we got into the program, the more we learned about access issues and hunger issues in New York City. So if you jump forward about 5 years, we launched something called Healthy Food and Community Change just earlier this year. And it's a multi-pronged strategy that embraces access, hunger, a number of other issues that interlock. It's a $15 million commitment over 5 years, and there are four prongs. One is around neighborhood-based strategies, and that can be access-driven or more comprehensive neighborhood change initiatives. Second is public-private partnerships, which is very much like we did with the New York City Green Card Initiative. Third is an academic partnership, including the Laurie M. Tisch Center at Teachers College. And fourth is to identify organizations that are really sort of pushing the New York City food world in new ways. And we hope that these efforts do uncover, in the course of the next administration, opportunities to work together.
I have to say, Rick, City Harvest is one of those recipients, and we really appreciate the work of the Illumination Fund in increasing healthy food access. Something that New York City in particular has become a nationwide leader on is the connection of our farmers markets and really increasing access to low-income people's buying power at those markets. With us today is Michael Hurwitz, who's the director of the Green Market Program of Grow NYC. Michael, you've seen this tremendous growth. You've been such an integral part of it. Tell us how this all came to be.
Kate, thanks very much for having me here today. Basically what we're doing is we're going back to our roots, because green markets were present in what we would call food insecure communities long before we used the term food insecurity, and this issue became hyper aware. We have had markets in Washington Heights and in the South Bronx for over 20 years, simply because we understand good markets, and that every community and every family wants access to the best, healthiest food available. And prior to 2001, when we called food stamps, and they were not electronic benefits, but actually in paper, we had thriving marketplaces in communities that had lower incomes, but wanted real access and had a real understanding of healthy food and good food. And those markets in 2001, when New York State became wireless, were cut off from that source of revenue, that crucial source of revenue to keep our farms viable, and the most vulnerable communities were cut off from a steady source of healthy food access. And from 2001 to 2005, the state and the New York State Department of Agriculture and Markets piloted a number of different programs to get wireless technology back available at farmers markets. And in 2005, our first year where we had electronic benefit access at three markets, we did our farmers brought in $967 worth of EBT.
And a drum roll for where we are now.
And then the drum roll for where we are now is this year we will surpass the $1 million mark.
Wow. Mm.
And when you couple that with the close to $300,000 in health bucks that our farmers will receive from the Department of Health and Mental Hygiene program, which I'm sure we'll talk about,
mm-hmm.
Which is obviously a program that came from this administration,
yeah.
and has been huge. We contribute to the steady growth of food stamp or SNAP usage at farmers markets directly to the availability of that incentive program. It's an incredible successful program. That's $1.3 million that are going into farmers' pockets that were not available 6 years ago. That's a lot of food going to communities and to families that otherwise would not have had access to those products.
I'd like to also – this is Rick Loughlass. I'd like to make a point about EBT and wireless EBT. And about 2 years ago, the city and the Farmers Market Federation piloted the idea of wireless – EBT, that's the electronic benefits terminals, at green carts. And so now about 60 green cart vendors around the city accept SNAP through wireless
90, EBT. Rick, now.
90, excuse me. Kathy is correcting me. And it's a profound opportunity for the green cart vendors who are on the streets, often in communities where SNAP is one of the key economic currency. And so I think, SNAP and EBT are just hugely important and frankly, one of the hallmarks, I think, of the administration.
Thank you. I'm going to let Michael Hurwitz respond to that quickly, and then I'm eager to pull in Kathy Nonas as our representative of the health department.
Well, one thing that I just don't want to get lost in this conversation is the markets that we had in underserved communities for so long. One of the reasons why they were able to be successful despite that loss of EBT income is the Farmers Market Nutrition Program.
Exactly.
On the WIC and the senior sides. And these are programs that are also being cut. We've already seen in the last 2 years cuts to the funding that we receive. At Green Market, farmers bring in $2.7 million a year annually in Farmers Market Nutrition Program coupons. To lose that income would devastate farms and would devastate the community. So these are cuts on top of cuts that we're talking about.
Thank you for that, Michael. Kathy Nonas is also with us, and Kathy is a special advisor with the New York City Health Department of Health and Mental Hygiene, specifically on nutrition and food initiatives, I should say. Kathy, clearly the Bloomberg administration has become also nationally known for its efforts to curb obesity. The issues of hunger and obesity are often intertwined and affect the same people, in fact. Can you tell us a little bit about how you see hunger as a public health issue?
Well, I think not only hunger, but I think we have to talk about food insecurity, particularly in New York, where sometimes food is available, but it's not necessarily the kind of healthy food that we hope that everybody has access to and that it's affordable for. So we really think about food insecurity and hunger and obesity kind of on two sides of the same coin. And in order to kind of address both those things, we really talk about increasing access to healthy food and making it more affordable for those who need it the most, and also across the board decreasing access to the unhealthy foods for all New Yorkers, so that the easiest choice is is the healthiest choice and obviously affordable to all New Yorkers. I do want to say that we are very, and the Bloomberg administration has been very cognizant of trying to reduce the disparities between rich and poor, and in the health department we do a community health survey every year of about 10,000 randomized people weighted heavily in the poorest areas in order to understand what we have to do and where we have to put our programs. So the places where we have tried to put green carts, our Shop Healthy Here, very similar to what City Harvest is doing, the Health Bucks, working with supermarkets to try to increase donations to pantries and soup kitchens, and our food retail expansion to support healthy supermarket tax and zoning incentives are all placed in those highest need areas to make sure that access to the healthier food is available. And as Michael said, in Health Bucks, where you get a $2 coupon for every $5 you spend at your farmer's market, it increases the buying power by about 40%. And now what Michael didn't say, but we're really excited, is that about 50% of the farmer's markets, and we have over 130 in New York City, about 50% of them are now in low-income areas. So that shows the need, that shows that when you put things there, that people actually use them. We have 500 green carts in the most underserved areas, and as Rick has said, we have about 90 EBT machines so far at these green carts. So we're trying constantly to increase the access to reduce diet-related diseases, and that includes obesity.
Thank you. Jan, any comments?
Well, I'm excited always when I hear about these effective efforts to make healthy food, fresh food, available to low-income people and to increase their purchasing power that enables them to get it. But I think we need to keep it in the context of understanding that the SNAP benefits themselves are, on the whole, too low to permit most recipients to purchase a healthy diet. People who are poor enough to qualify for SNAP, and I'm sorry to report that 40-some-odd percent of SNAP recipients have incomes below half the poverty line for their family size. People with incomes in that range are looking for the cheapest calories they can find. A lot of Americans, I think, are still confused about how is it that people could be obese and hungry at the same time. But if you look at the challenge of trying to feed your family on a completely inadequate benefit level, you find very quickly that you're buying cheap, filling calories. So while I think we want to expand the Health Bucks and the access through farmers market nutrition program and what have you, we also need to get back and take a realistic look at how we set the SNAP benefit levels.
I think we're going to take just a short break. And when we come back, I'm hopeful we can discuss maybe some potential solutions and things that we hope to see from the next mayor. So hang tight. You're listening to the Heritage Radio Network, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to Butterscotch by Tax Star on the heritageradionetwork.org. Stay tuned for more from Everything's on the Table.
Like what you hear so far? Support the network and become a member. Membership helps us bring you the best food radio in the world and gives you access to thousands of dollars in discounts at the sustainably minded businesses that support us. To become a member, visit heritageradionetwork.org today. Each week on Everything's on the Table, the Heritage Radio Network shines a spotlight on the organizations we love and support. The Brooklyn Bridge CSA supplies delicious organic produce from Sangley Farms in Peconic, Long Island, and several other local producers to hungry Brooklyners. Currently in its fourth season, the Brooklyn Bridge CSA is powered by volunteers who are committed to leveraging the CSA model to advance food justice. Today, Brooklyn Bridge CSA is part of Just Food's CSA network, and also works in collaboration with Hazon, a Jewish environmental organization. Brooklyn Bridge CSA is committed to exploring new ways of giving anyone in their local Brooklyn community access to good, healthy, nutritious food, regardless of income. Learn more about them at brooklynbridgecsa.org.
All right, we're back. You're tuned into Everything's on the Table, where we're talking about hunger, and we were just having a chat for a moment in the break. The landscape feels a little bleak, and I think one of the things we've done a good job of outlining is some of the things that are working and realizing that those are under threat. And I'm hoping we can use the rest of our time to kind of throw up some challenges to the next administration and think creatively about what we'd like to see continue, what we'd like to see added, and I'm excited to kind of hear where you guys take the conversation.
Thanks, Erin. You're right. This is a very sobering conversation, and when we've got 45% of kids in the Bronx that are living in poverty, it's very hard to put a rosy picture and a rosy face on that. But you know, we're at a moment of extreme change and threat, frankly. You know, we've got these looming, you know, possibly to the tune of $40 billion in cuts coming to the food stamp program. And, you know, we've also got a change in administration in New York City. And I'd like to hear maybe from Kathy, what do you think is important to maintain in order to keep the traction, the advances that we've made in New York? How do we institutionalize those? Let's start there. Well, actually, I'm not sure that we still have Kathy
and what we can do or can't do federally, because I think that the Congress, obviously, if they cut SNAP benefits, if they don't give farmers market incentives, preference, etc., then we're limited on that scope. So what we hope is certainly that the next mayor will not only continue to support Health Bucks, but continue to grow it as it's grown from, as Michael was saying, from a mere $40,000, thanks to the New York City Human Resource Administration, to almost 400,000 this year. So I think that we certainly hope that that money is available. We, you know, we need to continue to push industry, and again, this is both locally and federally, to stop marketing unhealthy food to, particularly to lower income areas. We just published a study that showed that in rich areas versus poorer areas, that you're seeing much more promotion of sugary beverages in larger sizes, sales, etc., but you don't see the sales for water, for juice, for milk, etc. So I think we need to really kind of push those things and do what we can on a local basis and to keep financially supporting these things both in and out of schools. You know, we did a great job in increasing summer meals this year. Clearly, we're going to have to do it even better next year. So it also means that all the different agencies have to talk with each other, work with each other as we have, and that needs to be continued by the next mayor.
Thank you. You know, a common and also really false way of thinking is that when we have government cuts, that the private sector can just make up the difference. And I really want to underscore the falseness of that. And Rick, can you comment a little bit on what you think the role of philanthropy can be in addressing some of the problems that we're talking about?
You're absolutely right that that's a common myth. Private philanthropy can't make up the difference in budget gaps. Private philanthropy, and when I say that, it's not just foundations, but it's individuals, it's corporations, represent a very small percentage of the support that goes for programs for food insecurity and any number of other food-related issues. And so it's really government that has the size and scope and legitimacy and I'll say responsibility to address these core issues. Now, I do think that private philanthropy has huge opportunities, but I think that's not budget remediation, but it's really seeding innovation. It's trying new ideas. Sometimes philanthropy can be more flexible and can look at things from a different perspective. The other thing that I find with philanthropy, and you know, again, broadly speaking, is that it can be first in. And while you know, there's sort of this myth that, well, if government cuts back, philanthropy can step in. It's actually kind of the inverse, in that philanthropy and foundations can try new things that will be tested and hopefully then can be adapted or adopted by government. Let me just give you a couple of examples. One, on the charity side, it was the Children's Aid Society that served the first school meals back in 1853, and it took until 1933 for there to be a national school meals program, which was government-driven. And it's really that kind of larger scale and moving from a voluntary approach to a structured system that is more comprehensive and effective that we start to see progress against the magnitude of these issues.
Thank you. Michael, you have the ear of the next mayor. What are you going to tell him when it comes to ensuring that our farmers and our urban agriculture and regional communities are provided for?
Well, obviously maintaining funding for the EBT/SNAP programs at farmers markets is crucial. Maintaining, if not increasing, the level of the Health Buck program is fundamental to increased food access, to healthy food access in New York City. Just like this mayor has been a national figure on these issues, I want our next mayor to take the lead. And you know, as much as we need to address food stamp cuts and actually increase what families are receiving, SNAP is just a piece of the puzzle. Subsidies and advertising are our two biggest, I think, threats and challenges. And if a 79-cent per pound chicken breast at the supermarket actually doesn't cost 79 cents when you factor in the health impacts and the other hidden costs of a dead zone the size of Massachusetts in the Gulf of Mexico. So I think that our mayor can be a leader nationally on these issues. And then I think lastly, I don't know how many of us today got all of our food through a farmer's market or through a CSA. I know that I certainly didn't, and that most of our food comes through wholesale distribution chains. And I think that the next mayor has to address how we can make more efficient getting our local farmers' products into the city and institutions and make it more affordable.
And Jan, we're going to close out with you. Where do we need to be, and what thoughts do you have?
Okay. Well, I have two top priorities for our next mayor in this area. And one is expanding food-related jobs. Food is a crucial part of the economy of New York City, and my center has just released a report called Good Food Jobs, so you can get access to that if you go on the New York City Food Policy Center website. What we're showing is that we can create or promote the creation of jobs that are both good jobs in the sense that they pay a living wage and have adequate benefits and protections for workers, and at the same time that they are jobs that contribute to the health of New Yorkers by increasing the supply or access to good food. And just one example, we have many, many people in New York who work as home health aides. We should be doing training for home health aides that equips them to cook and shop and cook on behalf of people with diabetes, for instance, and other diet-related diseases, so that the meals that they help to prepare are contributing to health. So that's one agenda, and the other one won't surprise you since I am the author of Free for All, Fixing School Food in America. I would really like to see our next mayor step up to the plate and lead us to universal free school meals in New York City. It's enough already with the three-tier system with free meals and reduced-price meals and paid meals. These divide kids at just a time in their life when we need to bring them together. We need to get rid of all that elaborate record-keeping and bureaucracy and feed our kids healthy meals in the school day. It could make an enormous step toward reducing hunger and promoting health.
I want to turn the tables on Kate a little bit. In your role of First City Harvest, you know, having that, answering that same question of what would you and your organization be looking for from the next mayor?
Thanks, Erin. You know, City Harvest works both on the immediate need for food by rescuing and delivering this year 42 million pounds of food that would otherwise go to waste, and distributing it to more than 450 soup kitchens and food pantries throughout all of the boroughs. New York City has remained flat funded when it comes to emergency food. The city is one of the few municipalities in the country that does actually have an arm of emergency food distribution, and we need to do more of that. As much as we really are all talking about the long-term strategy of making food secure individuals and improving food insecurity, we do have to feed people in the immediate time, and we need more food to do that. You know, we're also working, as Rick alluded to, in healthy neighborhoods throughout the boroughs to make sure, you know, this is really just marrying the comments that everybody has made throughout the day, to make sure that people have access to healthy and affordable food, and that people are choosing that food. So, you know, this isn't as simple as you know, channeling more food into New York City. It is about, you know, what Kathy spoke about with talking about food marketing. This is about ensuring that school meal programs, you know, are serving more kids with better food, and this is ensuring that all communities have access to farmers markets and green carts that are serving affordable foods. You know, this is both about the environments in which we live in and trying to make sure that that environment supports health, and it's about empowering individuals to make healthy choices on their own.
And Jen, you want to jump in?
I just want to add an addendum to say that there is an active campaign for universal free school meals, and it's called Lunch for Learning, and our listeners can find out more about it by Googling Lunch for Learning.
Well, that kind of dovetails nicely into what I think will be kind of the final question of the day. You know, we've talked a lot about, you know, things that feel kind of big and maybe a little out of the control of maybe an individual listener or someone like myself who doesn't deal with issues of food insecurity, who is fully employed. I'm curious what advice or what would you ask of us as people on the ground? Where do you need our resources most? Is it our money? Is it our time? Is it our votes? You know, where do you direct us to? What's the one thing that would be helpful to your organizations and helpful to alleviating hunger sooner?
Can I make one point? I think one thing, and this comes out, you should read a book by Joel Berg, and he has a website on using your intelligence and your skills when it comes to volunteering, if you do so on an individual basis. Whether that is, let's say you're a lawyer, you've got tremendous skills in advocacy and all sorts of legal issues and benefits. If you're an accountant, food banks often need help financially. So whatever skills you have, bring those to bear. Don't just sort of go out and ladle soup. but really use what you have and volunteer intentionally and intelligently.
And one final, I'll just add to that. Thank you, Rick. That, you know, just like this conversation here is not easy, and it's not necessarily fun to have, but they're conversations that we need to have, and far too few people really understand the fact that 47 million Americans are living, you know, in food insecure communities. You know, again, I just can't stop thinking about the fact that nearly half of the kids in the Bronx come from families in poverty. And there isn't one fix. If there was, we would have figured it out. But we need to not shy. We need to have the hard conversations and just, you know, keep fighting the fight, because this isn't going to be. We didn't get here overnight, and we're not going to see this fixed next year.
Michael, anything that you would ask of our listeners?
Well, pay attention. I think it's one of the least fun things to do, but one of the most important. You know, you see the bumper sticker, the T-shirt that says, "If you're not paying attention, if you're not angry, you're not paying attention." And then act on that. Just don't be so overwhelmed by the enormity of these issues that there's paralysis. But do something. Whether it's using your advanced skills to create a website for a nonprofit that doesn't have a tech department, or even going and using the spoon for a pantry that's short-staffed and everything in between. Obviously, we'll take your donation at Grow NYC. It's going to go to one of number of programs that are on the ground doing solid work. But you vote with your dollars every day. You vote. We're going to go to the polls in a few weeks. And I think that the more progressive folks we can put in government that reflect the values of a participatory society are what fundamentally this is about.
Thanks. And Kathy, anything to add from your perspective?
A New York City government website, which is New York City Service. So if people want to volunteer, if they want to look and see what there is to do, you can certainly go on that website and see. And I do think, and everybody has said this, that whatever we've done, we have to do a little bit more this year to make sure that the cuts that are happening in Congress are that we can help to make up some of that, because people are really going to need it.
Thank you so much. I want to thank Kate, Jan, Rick, Michael, and Kathy. Thank you all for joining us here in the studio and by phone. And encourage everyone to tune in next week for another episode of Everything's on the Table. If you want to find out more about some of the great organizations that were represented in today's conversation, you can find them at www.cityharvest.org, www.grownyc.org/greenmarket, www.nyc.gov/health, www.nycfoodpolicy.org, and www.lmtilluminationfund.org. Big thank you to my co-producers on this series, Michael Addison and Caitlin Salima. It's been a pleasure having you in the studio. Encourage everyone to tune in next week. This episode, like all 30 of our live weekly shows, are available for free. Visit our website, www.heritageradionetwork.org. If you believe in what we're doing, please consider becoming a member by clicking that donate tab. We will see you next week. Stay tuned in.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.